Welcome back to Niaga Spotlight, still with our Budget 2024 Roundtable, bridging development as well as closing gaps. Right, now moving along into the finance and loans side of things, right? Mr. Ding, now of course, under Budget 2023, government agencies were supposed to provide 40 billion ringgit in loans and financing. This was for MSMEs, including loans from Bank Negara Malaysia, BSN and Tekun. What are some of the results so far, or what have you heard from all the SMEs around Malaysia?
This one is, I think, is Prime Minister the launching Banani for economy. That one is a 40B, but and now he talked to the BNM and the BSN and the Tekung, and I also heard the Mara, but it's a SME corp is a. It cannot get the anything for the 40 billion the loan in the SME corp, but our SME also can't get the money to expand the business. At the moment, our SME is cannot get the 40 billion for the in the loan. Actually, it is a. Nobody to listen to can get. I also go to ask the another department. He say the is announced has, but
allocation hasn't
delivered. Hasn't the money is not coming.
Right. Okay. So still in the process then.
Yeah.
From there, Yunhan, I'd like to move back into your sharing with us any statistics or data that there is available on strategies when it comes to retaining talent. Picking up from, of course, what Mr. Ding had shared earlier, that one of our main reasons to encourage, of course, greater LFBR, also from women, is so that we can slowly become more self-dependent when it comes to our labour shortages.
Yep, absolutely. And I think when Mr. Ding and Dr. Suraya shared around some of the concerns of cost of living and the challenges of getting skilled workforces in as well, challenges with wages that we see it. We do a survey from Deloitte standpoint every year around the millennial and now the Gen Z survey.
Sure.
And when we looked at the most recent 2023 results for the millennial and Gen Z survey for Malaysia, right, we find that 65% of the Gen Zs in Malaysia and 70% of the millennials in Malaysia are living paycheck to paycheck. And that's a large proportion. And we compare to other countries around the world, it's not abnormal, but Malaysia is a little bit higher compared to the rest as well. And therefore, the majority of the Gen Zs and millennials are rethinking the role of work in their lives, right? If they can't afford housing, for instance, then what am I working for, right? And therefore, this also contributes to them feeling anxious and stressed, right? Almost, if not all of the time. And when it comes to sustainability aspects, right? Climate change, sustainability is really at the top of mind for the millennials and the Gen Z. And it does impact their lifestyle choices, right? The kind of businesses they would buy things from, the kind of companies they would work for, careers choices they would choose as well around sustainability. So therefore, when it comes to attracting this cohort of talent, because they're going to be the next generation of talent, right? If not already, it is around fair and competitive rewards. We must be able to provide compensation and benefits befitting the skill sets that they have, what the job requires and what the market demands. Right? And this is one of the key things. Secondly, is around the commitment to skills development. Right? These individuals, they know that skills don't last forever. And if they are not working with an organisation that's also committed to help them with that journey in reskilling and upskilling them, they'll go elsewhere. Right? So that has to be on top of the agenda. And last but not least is around meaningful work. Whatever work that they choose to do in whichever organisation has to deliver an impact aligned to the values that they subscribe to. They don't want to be exchanging 48 hours per week of their life just for a paycheck. There are many options to do that, right? So what's going to differentiate an organisation compared to the other is, do they subscribe to that mission of what the organisation is trying to do at the end of the day? To me, it's these three things around compensation, commitment to upskilling and meaningful work that we need to offer.
Yeah. Sure. Thanks so much for sharing that, Yunhan. And Mr. Ding, moving back into SMEs. Now, ESG is a term we hear so much about of late. And also, it's very important now for SMEs to have funding to have the grant so that they are able to do ESG transformation. What is SME Malaysia's thought on what the allocation should be and what will it be used for?
Actually, now is EAG is 2026, the first January, the Europe side want to start the carbon. Is it the manpower, the SME to start the EAG? Many the SME do not know the even understand what is the EAG. They know that cannot export the good to the EU country, but the government also must train the SME to what is the EAG. I also propose the government to the EAG the funding, the 2 billion. Because this 2 billion for the SME, the one-to-one, the matching grant to give the SME to transform to how to decide the EAG and the solar or everything for the technology, the green technology. But the EAG is because actually few years ago already start the what is the to start the EAG, but it's our government have the change is a problem, and this few years is not yet start the EAG. Now this year the government now is a post the EAG also the launching for the IEAG. But the EAG is very important for our Malaysian because many, I can say the micro 78%, because our Malaysia, the SME is 1.17 million, but it's 78%, 78.4% is the micro and the small and the medium. But it's many, I think, 90-something percent, more than 90, I don't say that 100%, it's 90, more than 90%
sure.
It's can't understand what is the EAG. Mm-hmm. Now this few months, I told also talking to the EAG, but still the micro and the SME can't understand what is the EAG. I hope the government, the budget is come out, it's 2 billion, to help the SME one-to-one the grant, how to train our SME, what is the EAG. It's not train the EAG, it's 2026, it's supply chain has a problem. You the export, you cannot go to Europe and EU country and US country, maybe reject your product or maybe your tax is very high. Actually, this supply chains, to the export company, he supply the material is all must have the EAG. If you don't have the EAG, you can't supply this product is go to this factory is to the export one. It's I hope government look at that very important for the EAG. Yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing
add on
that.
To
yes,
Mr.
please.
Mr. Ding's point as well, because when it comes to ESG vis-a-vis SMEs and these organizations, it is something that's moving quite fast. Right, and just I think this year, the IFRS, International Sustainability Standards Board, just announced a whole slew of new global sustainability and climate disclosure requirements, right, and standards. And this is going to form the basis of all the other regulators around the world of what is required in terms of climate change, environment, sustainability reporting, right? So it's going to be coming to Malaysia and it's going to be impacting SMEs, right? And in particular, when you read IFRS S2 as that standard, it sets out very clearly what are the compulsory reporting standards that you're looking at. And this requires that SMEs look at ESG seriously. not just as a passing interest that, oh, you know, it's not going to affect us. It will, because besides regulators, right, the investors, funding, right, they look at your ESG plan, sustainability plan, and are you eligible, right, and would they allocate funding to you? So it's going to hamper growth, as you said, export markets as well, right, accessibility to markets, if you're not ESG compliant or aligned to that agenda. And it comes back to also the kind of workforce that you need. Do you have the right workforce, the right skill sets, and the fact that if they are not even aware of the impact to ESG, that is a big gap that needs to be addressed. Right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm hearing exactly what both of you are saying, because when it comes to the fact that Malaysia has been able to capture some profit opportunity from being a more integrated part of the supply chain, this could be gone by 2026 if we do not invest in our SMEs right now.
Yep.
All right. Dr. Suraya, I want to move into EPF and ASB, particularly when it comes to the increase in the ASM fund in Malaysia by 5 billion ringgit. By 5 billion ringgit in total. And this has also been, over the past 3 months alone, been noted. What is this pointing towards when it comes to responsible investments and development of the national economy?
What one should look at this in terms of how do we best invest some of this, as the question was asking, how do we best invest this into true growth for our firms in order to give the right compensation, adequate, decent compensation for the workers? So one of the things that we are looking at is we've just had the new industrial master plan that has all the national energy transition roadmap, has all the, you know, climate, green industry being put into it as a, not really as a consequent, but as part of our new industrial master plan. And I think, why am I bringing it in? Because we have all these plans, we should use the money that we have to invest in this plan. And one of the things that is quite clear in that industrial plan is to increase the complexity of products that we have so that we can move up the value chain. But the current challenge is not just increasing complexity, because in order to increase complexity, all firms must go into R&D. R&D meaning the retained profits from your firm must be ploughed back into the business and not really looking at shareholders' dividends. So this is where there's a fine balance here, how to make certain groups wealthy from their dividends, but how to ensure that the firms are sustainable in terms of innovation. So I think this is where entrepreneurs have to play their role in ensuring that as you grow more complex, you need more of your retained profits to be ploughed back into your businesses. But that communication must also be given to all your shareholders that, you know, dividends might not be as high because we're ploughing it back into businesses. And I think I like what Yihun said just now, Mr. Lee said just now, because the new generation of workforce is not just looking for things that, you know, increase economic complexity or things like that. They also want something of value. Is this going to damage the environment? Are we building buildings on the slopes and it's going to cause more landslides? They want to be in something that creates value, not just for themselves, but society at large. I think us older generation should learn a lot from them because the impact of what we've done is being seen now. So I think one of the most important thing to really balance is what do we put for retained profit for businesses to grow, and how do we balance that need from shareholders that want high investment returns?
Definitely. Lots of great points in there, Dr. Suraya. Yunhan, anything to add to that when it comes particularly to EPF as well as our protections for increasing this coverage for average Malaysians and also in particular those who are participating in the gig economy? By all numbers taken into consideration, about 26% of the labour force currently participates in the gig economy as their main form of employment.
Yep. So I think the steps taken to improve the worker safety net is definitely a must and it's a given. We need to continue doing that. Having said that, it still comes back to if I don't have enough to contribute to that safety net, that's the root cause of the problem that we do need to solve, right? Because with the amount of EPF savings that are there, the majority of people or account holders in EPF will not have enough for retirement. And this is something that EPF has said so themselves. It's also because they don't have sufficient funds or leftover funds to even contribute additionally, right? So if we do not address the earning capacity of those at the lower rungs of income, they won't be able to contribute to those kind of funds in any case, right? So coming back towards the how to solve this, because it's not so much relying on the private sector to just invest in skills, invest in development and increase their income. It's not just one-sided like that, right? Because from a private sector standpoint, they may say, I invest so much in skills, yep, you might leave to my competitor or another industry, right? So it has to be done in concert with government, the private sector, education institutions together, because the way to solve this as well is not just looking at it one-dimensionally, like pay you more just to get a job with the private sector, push the problem to the private sector, right? Themselves, as you were talking about, Mr. Ding, the micro-businesses as well, these individuals at the lower rungs of the income levels, there are options not just for gainful employment, but also towards starting up their own micro-businesses. So that also means the kind of skills that we need to develop for these individuals range into areas like how do we tap into ecosystems of workforce, talent and businesses, right? Collaboration skills, business acumen that will help equip themselves towards multiple modes of income rather than just I need to study and then just get a job as the single solution to that, right? So that's how I look at addressing that as a longer term, focusing on the individual to then increase their income through better productivity and skills. Yeah.
Sure. Now, definitely, genuinely future-proofing the Malaysian workforce, in particular, of course, Gen Z, right? Mr. Ding, from there, I want to discuss food security for a while. Now, food security, when it comes to SME Malaysia, there have been quite a few grants that were allocated under Budget 2023. We also had BNM's Agri-Food Financing Scheme offering loans, as well as Agrobank's Agri-Food Financing Fund. What have been some of the outcomes or any progress that you have heard from your partners on the ground?
Okay, the Agri-Food Fund is funding is because also our member for the farmer to complain to me the Agri-Food Fund, the funding is very difficult to get the funding. Also he asked a lot the document and some because it's too many, some because some the cannot get this document. It's very difficult to borrow this funding. Because Malaysia, the food is import is more than 600 million, you see. It's very, a lot. Because, you see, I hope the government is support the young people, the university come up for the Pertanian or UPM. To easy to get the funding to help to young people to do the this farming, the digital farming. It's because many Malaysia have the technology, but it's young people who have don't have the money because the funding is very difficult to get. I hope this government, the budget is 2024 and also the apply the this funding is must simple, transparent and easy to apply. You see Malaysia, why a lot the land, MD land, why? They want to tanam the vegetable, a lot can do the food, and no need to import same the corn. Our also corn 100% import.
Correct. So what? We cannot technically say we are a chicken producer if we are importing
correct.
All the feed, right? Right. Fair enough.
At least is a government to must do. You want to help the farmer is must do easy to transparent to apply the give the farmer to chance to apply the this money how to deliver the food our agro food. I hope the agro bank is to maybe to change the apply the
process.
The process is simple and transparent and faster.
So cutting down all the red tape.
Yeah, yeah,
definitely. We hear you, Mr. Ding. Thank you for that. And from there, Dr. Suraya, so how ought we to be responding in light of not just, of course, climate-related factors, but of course, the recent increase in rice prices, a suturing of our supply chains, and what we were expecting was going to be something reliable, such as the rice supply from India. We're definitely going to have to move towards being far more self-reliant for food security.
So Malaysia imports around 35 to 45% of the total rice required, and the rest we meet by domestic production. And domestically, we produce about 1.7 million metric ton of rice per year, whereby 60% are produced from the northern states of peninsula, namely Perlis, Kedah, Penang and Perak. So this poses a food security risk, as it takes only one natural disaster in northern states, and we could experience a severe shortage of domestic rice. So one of the things we thought that could be done, of course, this is a long-term thing, but this could help by improving rice production in Sabah and Sarawak. This is something we could do. And at the same time, I think in terms of food security, and self-sufficiency, I think for KRI, we do believe that there are many other lens that we should look at when we look at self-sufficiency and food security, because it has to be affordable. Sometimes I just give you a devil's advocate type of opinion.
Sure.
We might think we can produce everything here, but unfortunately, our soil is not that great. The things that we think we can produce for less is not really the case. And we need a lot of government injection into it. So sometimes it's, if we produce it here, but it becomes more expensive and it's not accessible, which is part of what food security means. I mean, if you produce it all by yourself in the country and yet just 20% of the top could consume it, then it's not accessible. So I think this food security self-sufficiency rate needs to have a bigger and wider lens of assessing it in terms of accessibility and food what do you call this, accessibility especially, and affordability.
Mm-hmm, certainly. Thank you for that, Dr. Suraya. And Yunhan, moving from there into digitalization. Now, that is definitely a huge agenda under Budget 2024, which we're hoping will be announced favourably. Thoughts around the importance of access to stable internet. It's not just about internet penetration anymore, right? Particularly when it comes to the development of more rural areas and even, of course, Sabah and Sarawak, which have perennially had these issues.
Yeah, I think it's a no-brainer. It has to be done, right? To the extent I would believe that internet access, stable internet access at adequate data transfer speeds is fundamentally a human right. Right, to be able to access that. And on top of that is also the ability to access affordable means to get to that internet, right? Be it smartphones, devices, tablets, laptops, right? They need access to that too. Because with the amount of resources available online at their fingertips, right? The learning curve isn't that steep to get on and to explore. And with so many free learning courses out there, whether it's around electronics, plumbing, carpentry, business running, EV, robotics, programming, right? These are available skill sets just there. All you have to do is to provide internet access to that area. Now, of course, the effort or the infrastructure spending for that can be huge, right? But I think the payoff is also tremendous, because in organizations, or at least in countries that we look at, like Australia, for example, it is a huge landscape, right? And the federal government there in Australia, they committed, I think, nearly $1 billion over a period of a few years to actually improve mobile connectivity, last mile connectivity, that essentially also serves to benefit the indigenous or orang asli in Australian rural areas, right? And this involved not just federal government spending, local government spending, state government spending, private corporations, NGOs, community organizations, and the telco providers themselves all coming together to enable this infrastructure to be put together, right? And of course, it is important for efforts like that to have transparency in the spending, but also when it comes to execution, that is also well done. So at the end of the day, the rakyat in the rural areas get stable, fast access to internet that they need.
Absolutely. And also not forgetting the fact that it involves access of students particularly to not just e-learning, but also being able to succeed in the future of work. One last area I'd like to close out the discussion. Mr. Ding, let's talk about tourism when it comes to budget 2023 allocations. What are some of the needs for our SME tourism industry players? What are their pain points and their challenges? And how will they be able to get back to pre-pandemic levels? We are still not there yet, right?
Okay, the tourism is very important for our country because tourism is very easy for the income, very fast to the income, our economy. I hope the government same the tourism is same the Thailand to open from China is no need to visa. Because Malaysia, the economy is down, very slow down. And also you will ask the tourism come open the Malaysia. I hope the government to expand the our Malaysia, the tourism to the, to promote our Malaysia in the our whole world, to promote the whole world, the tourism. And the tourism is all coming, our can earn the tourism, the money is very fast for the our production.
So maybe that would involve maybe tax exemption for the low-cost hotels and any other wants that the SME has?
Tax exemption is now is the SST for the hotel, motel. Motel now is a 500,000 is a not the SST, but now the motel is I hope the government look at this, the budget is 500 increase to 1.5 million. Below 1.5 million, he don't have the zero SST test because it's a cheaper and all the for the tourism coming to the our Malaysia, the budget hotel. Because now the budget hotel is a 500, it's more the 500,000. He already have the SST test. I hope this 500,000 to increase to 1.5 million. Because now the restaurant is a 1.5 million. Why the budget hotel also can out to 1.5 million? Is below the 1.5 million is a zero SST test.
Certainly. All right. Thank you so very much. I wish we had more time, so much more to discuss. But as always, a pleasure, Dr. Soraya, Mr. Ding, as well as Yuen Han. So that has been our Budget 2024 Roundtable, only on Niaga Spotlight with me, Tamina Kausji. Of course, balancing development and closing gaps. We hope you have a productive Friday ahead and see you next time.